The Kingdom of Ai, Chapter 3, The City of Judgment and Contempt. Therefore, do not go on passing judgment before the time, but wait until the Lord comes, who will both bring to light the things hidden in the darkness and disclose the motives of men's heart. Then each man's praise will come to him from God. 1 Corinthians 4, verse 5. The walls of another city loomed on the horizon. The water and food supply the group had carried were now totally exhausted. They desperately needed to find a place to replenish these basic needs, so they headed toward the city that they spied ahead of them. As they drew near to the city, they read the words on the signboard perched over the entrance to the city gates. "Welcome to the city of judgment and contempt. We can find fault with anyone." When the group read the words, a heaviness seemed to settle over them. Everyone stood quietly as they considered their options. They knew they must get supplies before continuing on their journey, but none of them felt the least bit enthusiastic about entering the city of judgment and contempt. Finally, Timothy spoke up. "It is clear that we must pass through these gates of judgment and contempt, but I think it's vital that we guard our hearts so that the words that will undoubtedly assail us here do not pierce us to the core." "Exactly," encouraged Stephen. "Let's remember our mission and keep it in the forefront of our minds. We have been called by the King to enter his beautiful city and live with him in peace. We cannot allow discouragement or criticism from other people to stop us from moving toward our goal. Let us go forward, but remember to guard your ears." The group moved ahead with renewed determination and entered the gates of the city, looking for somewhere to purchase the needed supplies. They hadn't progressed far down the main street when the whistles and catcalls started. "What do we have here, fellows? Thieves? Murderers? Or just some ridiculous-looking strangers?" one voice called out. Another joined in with, "They look like bums or homeless people. They're probably dangerous criminals." "It's true," said another. "We should have the police chase them out immediately." As they passed by, Thomas turned to the group with a note of disgust in his voice and said, "How can you decide who we are when you don't even know us and have never even exchanged a few words with us?" "How can we do it, you ask?" "Why, it's so easy. Judgment and contempt come naturally to us," one of the ringleaders of the group replied with a smirk. The group with him chortled and laughed. "Well, you are just plain wrong," Timothy answered him. "We are not bums or thieves. We are travelers heading toward the kingdom of Iam, and we stopped in your city to buy supplies. That is all." Timothy spoke firmly and then turned to continue walking down the street. The seekers began to quicken their pace. "Oh, now I understand who they are," the ringleader muttered to his crew of fellow critics. With a loud voice, he began to shout, "These people are religious delusionists, wandering the countryside, spreading their bizarre beliefs in another kingdom outside the kingdom of Ai. We should drive them out now before they pollute our city with their lies." A chorus of voices chimed in. "Yes, you're right. Away with them." Stephen encouraged the group to ignore their shouts and to continue walking down the street as they searched for a market where they could purchase food and water. They found an open store and walked in and began to quickly choose items to purchase for their journey. As they approached the proprietor to pay for the goods, the men who had shouted the insults at them came marching through the doors. "Don't sell to them," the ringleader urged the store's proprietor. "They are religious delusionists, spreading lies in our fair city, and we've come to drive them out." The store owner continued to bag the supplies and barely gave the man a glance. "Their money spends as good as the next man," he replied with the sound of boredom in his voice. "They are religious delusionists, I tell you. Don't help them in any way," the angry man shouted. The store owner looked up at him reluctantly and said, "Whether they are religious crazies, as you claim, I do not know. But I do know we need the business, so drive them out of the city after they pay, if you like." Stephen quickly paid for their groceries while Timothy and Thomas grabbed the supplies and hurried out of the store. The seekers moved as fast as they could toward the city gates, with the mockers in pursuit hurling insults as they marched in unison after them. The mob, following the group of seekers, yelled, "You are fools, chasing a fantasy and influencing weak-minded people like that young girl you're dragging with you. You have no doubt hypnotized her with your lies." The seekers began to run as they reached the city gates and darted out of the city limits. They did not slow their pace until they were some distance away, though they could still hear the outcry of the men from Judgment and Contempt. As they stood yelling from the city gates, they could no longer discern the contemptuous words they shouted after them. When she caught her breath, Mary spoke up. What was wrong with that city and with those men? They accused us of so many things and decided we were evil people without even knowing anything about us. How could they judge and condemn us by just looking at us? Before anyone attempted to answer her question, a voice was heard behind them addressing Mary's frustration. In the king's book it is written, "Do not judge so that you will not be judged. For in the way you judge, you will be judged, and by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you. The day will come when those men, and in fact the entire population of the city of contempt, the city of judgment and contempt, will stand before the judgment seat of God to answer the question, 'But you, why do you judge your brother? Or you, again, why do you regard your brother with contempt?' And God himself, who has forbidden humans to judge and condemn one another, will mete out his justice to those who have disobeyed him in this way." The group of seekers had stopped and turned to listen to the man who spoke. He did not introduce himself, but Stephen took note of the white robe he wore and wondered if this was the man Timothy and the two brothers had told him about. From the looks of recognition he observed on their faces, Stephen guessed that this was the man who had instructed them to head to the city of seekers. They continued to listen in silence to the man's sobering words. "It is very important that you learn a lesson from your experience in the city of judgment and contempt. You now have experienced what it feels like to be wrongly judged and held in contempt by others. It is a sin that God hates. Be careful as you travel toward the kingdom of I Am that you do not fall into the same sin yourselves by judging others along the way. Every time a person is certain that their judgment of another is accurate, they always discover later that their judgment was flawed by what they did not know. Only the king has the perfect wisdom and understanding of all things to make a righteous judgment. That is why he forbids us to judge others. As tempting as it may be to judge others, you must become determined in your heart to leave judgment to God alone." Timothy waited until the man was finished speaking and then addressed him. "Dear sir, we are so grateful for your good counsel. We treasure the words you spoke to us in the beginning of our journey, and we have held them in our hearts to encourage ourselves to continue. But we never learned your name. May we know it now? My name is Andrew the Encourager. I was sent by the king to help you along your journey." He turned to Stephen and Mary and welcomed them by name. "I am so happy you found your fellow seekers. The king will be pleased to hear you are traveling together." "How do you know us?" Stephen asked incredulously. "The king is the one who has called you to seek him, and I'm his servant." "How did you come to meet the king?" Thomas asked. "I was a disciple of the king's son when he walked in the kingdom of Ai many years ago. I spent 3 years with him, listening to his teachings about his father, the king, and about his kingdom of I Am." Stephen was intrigued by this information and eagerly asked, "What is the king's son like?" A smile spread slowly across Andrew's face. "He is both kind and loving, and yet fierce as a lion. And he has fire in his eyes when he speaks of the kingdom of I Am." "Did he really offer himself up to be killed to pay for the disobedience of our first forefathers?" Stephen inquired. "I heard that story from an old man named Methuselah in the city of respectability." Andrew looked almost stern when he replied, The sacrifice made by the king's son for all who dwell in the kingdom of Ai is not a story. It is a truth that I witnessed myself," he said with solemnness in his voice. "And after dying, he came back to life to demonstrate his authority over death itself. He broke the chains of death and sin so that all who live in the kingdom of I would have the opportunity to move to the kingdom of I Am, which is also known as the kingdom of love. I have brought you a gift to help you gain understanding about the king's ways. His voice had softened, and out of the bag he always carried, he drew an old leather-bound book. "It is the king's book," he said with a tone of reverence in his voice as he gently placed it in Timothy's hands. "What is the king's book?" David asked curiously. "It is the book of all books, where the king has revealed his secrets and explained the ways of his kingdom," Andrew answered. "You must read it every day. Meditate on its words, and it will help you to understand the heart of the king and his son. Now, you must get on your way." "We will," Timothy promised as he carefully tucked the leather volume into his bag. No one dared ask another question, and the little group began walking down the road again. When Stephen glanced back, he realized Andrew was gone. The sun burned brightly in the cloudless sky as the small group walked down the road. When it was directly overhead and the seekers were sweltering under its intense rays, Thomas suggested they take a break for lunch in a small grove of trees that he spied up ahead. Everyone murmured weary-sounding words of agreement, and they turned down the dirt road which led to the miniature forest. The coolness of the shade under the canopy of trees was a dramatic change from the oppressive heat that they had been suffering through. The group threw down their bags and knapsacks, and each one found a comfortable spot to recline. No one moved for several minutes as they soaked up the cool stillness of the forest. Then Stephen popped up his head and said, "I'm hungry. Let's eat." Thomas joined him, and the two opened the bags of supplies and began to pass around bread, nuts, and fruit to the rest of the group. Everyone ate quietly, enjoying the beauty of their forested picnic spot and happy for the opportunity to have some peaceful moments to relax. After finishing his lunch, Timothy pulled out the leather-bound volume that Andrew the Encourager had entrusted to him. "I was thinking I could read aloud so we could all discover the secrets of the king's books together, if that's okay with everyone." "Yes," Mary said, "I would love that." All the rest of the group nodded in agreement, encouraging Timothy to proceed. Timothy opened the book midway and found himself staring at the words, "The Book of Psalms." Timothy muttered half aloud. It seemed that there are books within the king's books. Maybe that's why Andrew said it is the book of books. Anyway, this looks like a good place to start. Psalm 1, he announced as he leaned back against the trunk of a tree and began to read aloud. "How blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, nor stand in the path of sinners, nor sit in the seat of scoffers. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night. He will be like a tree firmly planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in its season, and its leaf does not wither. And in whatever he does, he prospers. The wicked are not so, but they're like chaff which the wind drives away. Therefore the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the assembly of the righteous. For the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish." The words Timothy read seemed to hang in the air. The group was silent as they pondered the richness and depth of the verses they had just heard. For a few minutes, no one said a word. Stephen spoke first. "In all my life, I have never heard such beautiful and true words. I want to be that blessed man that doesn't walk in the counsel of wicked people, and I want to prosper in whatever I do. And now I know how to become that man. I must meditate on the king's words. Timothy, please read that again." "Yes," David said, "I agree. Please read it again." Timothy complied with the request and began to reread the rich and meaningful words of Psalm 1. One by one, the members of the group leaned back and closed their eyes, listening to Timothy's lyrical reading of Psalm 1. With the words, "He will be like a tree firmly planted by streams of water floating in the air," the group drifted off to sleep, weary from their journey. After finishing the psalm, Timothy closed the book. Before long, weariness overcame him, and he too fell asleep.